He was about 4 years old, dressed in hand-me-downs. Short trousers to below his scarred knees, thin legs ending in sabots, a faded blue sailcloth shirt several sizes too large, and a broad peasant cap resting on his ears. He was standing with his back pressed against his father's knees, held by his father's hands, which lay heavy on his thin shoulders. Held against his father like this, he felt safe, and that was how his father wanted him to feel, protected and safe from harm. But what harm? This he didn't know. He could only, with that acute perception small children share with animals, sense that something terrible was happening. He felt it through those strong protective hands. He turned his head left and right and looked at them. Those hands, covering him like armour, were seamed with heel cuts and scratches, grained with dirt, broken nailed, and so rough he could feel the calluses through his thick shirt. The morning had started like any other early spring morning that he could remember. Up before dawn, walking across the compact, dew-laden fields, his small hand in his father's. When daylight came, he still had to be guided by a hand, as a low mist veiled the pasture, and because he was so small, he couldn't see over it. He couldn't even see the cows properly, until they were assembled in the yard, ready for milking. Sturdy creatures with blotched brown and white faces, they looked down on him with soft eyes, as he tried to get his small hand around their teats and draw off the rich Normandy milk in the way his father had shown him. That was this morning. Now he knew that something was wrong. It was mid-afternoon, time for the second milking. Yet here was his father, his mother, brothers and sisters, standing here on the roadside, his father holding him tightly. What about the milking? Then he heard it. Felt his father stiffen and tighten his hold on him still further. His mother had her arms around his sisters, and his elder brothers were peering from behind the unkempt laurel hedge. The sounds were getting closer, louder. He could smell it, the sound. It smelled of burning oil, of exhaust fumes. The early May mist had quickly burned off by the sun, which, by mid-afternoon, was speckling its way through the hedgerows and onto the road. The boy could see the dust dancing in front of his eyes. He wanted to ask his father about it. It was like flecks of gold shimmering all around him. He screwed his head round and up to look at his father and was shocked to see tears running down his face. His father crying, the tears making bright, sun-glistening rivulets down his craggy, unshaven cheeks. All of a sudden, and for the first time that day, he felt frightened and unsure. He turned his eyes back to the road and watched the first column of armoured vehicles emerge from the bend in the narrow lane that passed by the farm. He felt his father's hands press him still tighter as the convoy rumbled inexorably by. Now the fear was replaced by wonder. This was too big to be frightened of. This was altogether outside his experience. This was exciting. After a long time, there were no more cars and trucks, only men. Men marching four abreast, as many as the narrow lane would permit. Men in grey uniforms with steel hats and guns and boots, looking straight ahead. The boy wanted to wave, to make them look at him and wave back. But his father's hands told him that would be wrong, so he just watched the endless column until it had passed. He felt he was no longer the baby of the family. In the time it took his father's enemies to pass, he sensed his infancy had passed with them. On the surface, life on the farm continued very much as he had always known it. The milking, the feeding of chickens, calves and pigs, butter and cheese making, summer smells of hay and sweet meadow grasses. All these were unchanged, but he had changed. He must have done. Or perhaps it was everybody else in the family. His mother no longer treated him like a baby. His sisters were always found whispering in corners when they should be petting and spoiling him. His brothers no longer teased him or bullied him, depending on their mood, but ignored him as they consorted with the other bigger boys in the community. And what of his father? His father, who he had been seen to weep, seemingly now had no time to talk to him of the ways of husbandry and country wisdom, to point out a new badger set, a squirrel tray, or to take him by the hand and walk the perimeter of the family holding. Since he had apparently lost the privileges of toddlerhood, he assumed he must have grown up, and that this newfound status, from which so little advantage appeared to accrue, began with those men in grey, began, in fact, with his father's tears. With meteorological irony, it was a lovely summer in northern France, that summer of 1940. The boy, not allowed near the gates or on the road, played in the yard and watched the dust swirl and settle as convoys of supplies and building materials passed by the farm on their way to the coast. He could hear the sounds of demolition, of construction, shouted orders in some strange and to him a musical tongue, and the songs of the men as they worked. One day, he was playing with a pile of stones, concentrating on balancing them, making a tiny wall, tongue protruding as his dry stone wall took shape, when he noticed, out of the corner of his eye, a pair of boots, black and coated with dust, their contained legs apart. They stood four square and firmly planted. The boy looked up the length of boot, breeches and tunic, to a sunburned face, blonde hair and forage cap. The face smiled down at him, but before he could scramble to his feet, his mother swept in front of the soldier, snatched him up into her arms and into the house. This particular soldier became a daily visitor to the farm. He called for fresh milk and eggs, was quiet and courteous in his dealings with the family who, nevertheless, sustained the barrier between them, which went beyond that of language. He remained unmoved by this attitude of veiled hostility, was always correct and as friendly as he was allowed to be. As the weeks went by and the months moved through autumn and winter, the procedure was unaltered. The soldier would arrive in the yard, at the farm, on his bicycle, commandeered, as were all forms of transport in the region. He would lean the bicycle against one of the upright stone posts of the barn, walk across the yard, knock on the back door, and wait for the provisions to be brought to him. He was never invited into the house, nor did he seek admittance. As soon as it was obvious that the soldier posed no immediate physical threat to the occupants of the farm, the boy was given the task of handing over the produce at the door. Each morning, at the customary knock, he would open the door, nod to the soldier, disappear back into the kitchen, and return with the eggs and milk which had been made ready. The milk was in one of 2 3-litre jerry cans which the soldier had produced on his first visit, the empty one from the previous day being handed back to the boy as he opened the door. This simple ceremony continued into the next spring and summer, the knock on the door, the empty container being handed over, and the full one, together with 12 eggs, delivered back to the waiting soldier. As soon as the door had closed, the boy took the empty container, and it was washed up together with the rest of the dairy utensils. During the exchange, the small boy and the friendly blonde trooper in a uniform and jackboots would nod to each other. As time went by, the nods developed into tentative smiles, which, still later, became broader until a fully-fledged conspiratorial wink was added to the repertoire. The rest of the family knew nothing of this. In any case, the boy's father always took care to be out of the yard when the soldier came. Instinctively, the boy shrank from any action which, to his father, might appear disloyal. The arrival of the soldiers had made his father cry, yet he knew this soldier to be a kind man. A man like his father in many respects, strong, open-faced, work-worn hands, and obviously comfortable in the surroundings of a working farm. So why was he a soldier? Apart from the colour of his hair, he looked more like a farmer. The boy couldn't understand. He was sure people would like the soldier more if he was a farmer and not a soldier, so why did he choose to wear a uniform? He wanted to ask these questions of his family, but they had already told him they didn't want to talk about the soldiers with him. They were becoming more and more morose and surly as time went on, more secretive. They talked in whispers everywhere, especially his brothers and his father, in corners away from him. He felt excluded, and they wouldn't talk to him. His little morning communion became the highlight of his day. He looked forward to and waited for that knock on the door, the gentle hand on his shoulder, the smiles, the winks and the friendship, all unspoken, yet clearly understood by them both. Then one day, there came a different knock, an impatient, peremptory knock. He ran to the door and was thrown to one side as it opened, uninvited, and slammed into him. It was a soldier, but a different soldier, this one unsmiling, threatening. His mother ran to her son and thrust him behind her. The soldier held out the jerrycan, watched unblinkingly as she fetched the provisions, took them from her, and strode out, leaving the door open behind him. And from now on, the boy hated his daily chore. His friend had gone and been replaced by this man, who made no effort to be pleasant, although he was not actively unkind or brutal. He was, however, unapproachable and cold. Anyway, the boy was now old enough to make some sense of the whisper conversations that reached his ears, and he could identify this new soldier with what he heard. The seasons took their inevitable course. The boy grew progressively older and infinitely wiser as his understanding of the situation developed. He learned to hate and to scheme, and to join in plots hatched in dark, out-of-the-way corners. He also learned how to avoid knowledge, the knowledge that other strangers, speaking yet another language, were seen, hidden, and sheltered about the community. Sheltered, in some cases, on his father's farm. He, as the youngest and least likely to arouse suspicion, was sometimes given the task of climbing the outside stone steps to the old hayloft. He would shut the door carefully behind him and tap out a special code on the false partition. A trapdoor would open, and hands would reach out in the dark for the rations that he had brought with him. He never saw much of these strange nocturnal people, so, if asked, he could honestly say he knew nothing of them. It was strange, though, because whenever this sort of thing happened, it seemed to revitalize the family. Their natural good humour was restored to them. Their eyes, dulled so much of the last few years, assumed brightness of confidence. They became motivated and moved about their mundane tasks with vigour and assurance. Then, one day, a neighbour, often a participant in the huddled discussions which took place, flew into the kitchen breathless and in a state of high excitement. He went straight to the boy's father and, without the customary formalities of a handshake, embraced him. He still held him close as he whispered to him, and they both, to the amazement of the boy, jumped up and down and danced an ungainly jig on the flagstones. In hushed, broken tones, his father then told the family of the momentous news, of the historic events that were to take place over the next few days, and of the part that they, his family, were to play in them. Spring was breaking into summer again. A fateful time of year, mused the boy. Still dressed in clothes outgrown by his brothers, he stood listening to the sounds of battle as Allied troops fought for the beachhead less than 10 kilometres away. He heard the carpet-rending sound of shell and bomb, the scream of projectiles close to hand. Too far away to hear the sound of men screaming as they were torn apart, but near enough to see the flashes of fire, the pillars of smoke and flame. Then there were the localized explosions, supply routes being blown up, strategic roads and bridges and railways. His father was out there somewhere. Suddenly, he felt small again and afraid. He ran back into the yard and tucked himself into one of the outbuildings. They were old and full of spy holes where the mortar had disappeared. He looked through one of those gaps and thought he could see signs of feverish activity in one of the far meadows that bordered the lane. He focused his eyes more carefully into his limited field of vision, shapes running, stopping, looking and running again towards the farm. He could hear his mother shouting for him, hear the fear and hysteria in her voice, but he couldn't move. He was transfixed by the puppet show being performed in front of him. The marionette antics of the soldiers jerking to and fro, this way and that, and some of them collapsing as if their strings had been cut. Now the battle seemed to be going on all around him. Now he could hear the shouts and the screams and other moans, the curses, the anger and the fear. The fear communicated itself to him. He tore himself away from the wall, the stone warm with the sweat from his hands, and ran out into the yard. As soon as he got outside, he stopped short. A grey uniformed soldier was standing with his back to him, his rifle trained on the gate leading from the yard to the field. A flash of khaki appeared on the other side of the gate from beneath the wall on which it was hung. The unfamiliar uniform assumed a sharp outline, a battle-dressed leg, an arm supporting a rifle. The boy stood still, not breathing, as the German soldier raised his rifle, waiting for his target to reveal himself. The boy was transfixed. He could see a trigger finger whitening. When he was deafened and half-blinded by an explosion on his right side, the German crumpled to the ground, bloodied, his helmet rolling away across the rough cobbles. Fearfully, the boy looked around and saw his father, shotgun, gently smoking. The khaki-clad American shouted his thanks as he ran by them on his way to the road. Shaking, the boy and his father walked to the German. It was his German. The blonde hair and open face now streaked with blood. His father knelt down and went through the dead man's pockets, taking out a wallet which contained a photograph of a man standing with his arms around the neck of a cow, a black and white cow. He was smiling, looked happy. There was also a photograph of the same man, his German, with his arm around the shoulders of a small boy, about 5 years old, with blonde hair. In this one, not only looked happy, but sort of proud. Trembling, the boy looked up at his father, and for the second time in his short life, saw the tears coursing through the greying stubble. Suddenly, the boy felt his heart breaking for the whole world, and his own tears warm on his cheeks and salty to his lips. He flung his arms round his father's waist and hid his head in the rough woolen jersey. When, later in life, he looked back on this moment, a moment in the life of an 8-year-old, he reflected that this was the time. This was the very moment when he had really grown up.